I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Time and Room Podcast. Most enchanting lacrosse podcast in all the galaxy, all about lacrosse, featuring my buddy, Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane, of course, played at Robert Morris, coached at Robert Morris, was a two-time captain there. He's currently the head coach at St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac. Hey, Coach, how's it going, buddy?
Going good, man. I'm on a baby countdown right now. So
right? How exciting Wednesday. Is this?
Yeah. It's Wednesday, July 8th. And
Are we telling people? Like, we already know, like, the sex and all that?
No. I mean, yeah, we're telling people it's a boy.
Got that boy.
I know, exactly. So I'm pumped about that. So although my daughter, man, she's a lot of fun. So you know how the girls are. They treat you,
there's,
I think, a
lot better. Nothing like daughters, but there's also nothing like having a son.
Yeah. So, no, my wife is set to for an appointment on Tuesday of next week to deliver the baby. If it comes early, it comes earlier. So, yeah. So I'm locked down right now a little bit, but still doing some lacrosse stuff. So, reluctantly letting me out of the house to keep. I say it's a mental health thing, man. I got to get out and.
It's an incredible time. There's nothing like it. I can't believe it's been, 10, 11 years since I had my last. There's literally nothing like it. I am so happy for you guys. And I don't know. I don't know if we'll have a podcast next week or not. It'll all depend. I know that we're working on a massive guest that we're going to probably have next. I just don't know if we'll be able to pull it off before the baby comes.
Right. I know. Exactly. Andrea is one of the facts. She actually mentioned that to me. She said, you know, you can't do the podcast next week.
Yeah. So we might have to take
you mean
off.
I can't bring the microphone and the laptop to the hospital? I got to be there for 3 days.
Right.
You might have to hear me through a mask, but so I appreciate that. We're excited. So, big guest tonight. You know, we got, one of my, good friends when I was in the college coaching world, Jeremy Hirsch at Princeton. He's going to be an awesome conversation.
Yeah. He's a guy that's right smack dab in the middle of all this sort of Ivy League drama that, you know, happened to be announced today when we're recording this. The Ivy League announced, I guess, that they're postponing at least all sports in the fall. Then they're going to reevaluate, I guess, in January. So Jeremy's going to be a great guy to talk to. Kind of a massive decision. And what's kind of scary about it, Coach, to be honest with you, is we know the Ivy League's They were sort of the first guys out of the box that canceled in March, and then we just kind of saw that snowball, right? Then all the other conferences started to shut down with basketball, and then before you know it, I mean, sports were shut down. So by the Ivy League making this announcement that there are going to be no fall sports, that's kind of a scary thought. Now, it's funny, you and I joke about it when we text each other. You're a guy that grew up just outside of Columbus. I'll bet everything I own, they're not canceling football at Ohio State, right?
Yeah.
No, I don't see it happening.
I don't see it happen. I would be shocked.
Right?
I would be shocked.
They're not canceling football at LSU. They're not canceling football at Alabama. They're going to find a way by hook or by crook. Now, maybe they'll push it into the spring, but that's going to be awkward and present its own challenges. But I just can't see some of these Power 5 conferences shutting down football in particular. It's such a huge moneymaker. But the Ivy League, it's a different situation.
Yeah, I mean, you said the Big Ten schools could scale back fans and things like that, but I don't see them canceling this season. And you're right with the Ivy League. It's hard because it feels like this decision with the Ivy League today almost puts us back to where we were in March. It's like, oh my God, like, you know, I remember when I was at practice in March and I was like, I looked at my coaches and I was like, the NESCACs just, you know, the NESCAC schools just canceled their seasons.
Right.
And I'm like, that's crazy. And then I was like, oh, then the Ivy League just did it. And I'm like, oh, that won't happen to us. And then obviously it did. And so, no, it's definitely a little bit scary. I think the good thing is with lacrosse, it's in the spring. I am still myself pretty positive. I feel like in the spring, I think they'll be able to make something happen. But it's not only that, right? It's the Harvard said that they're only going to have their freshmen back on campus and their juniors. And so I think Princeton can practice a little bit, but with only the people they have there. And I know that's what, you know, we think that might happen with Marist. You don't know. Marist hasn't said what they're going to do, but you know, I think there's a chance that they can at least practice, which is huge. I mean, I'm out right now doing some stuff with some local kids. It's like, it's great for these kids to be out.
Is
if
it?
They can be, it's amazing. It's
just
like,
a little club stuff. Kids need
just small stuff. The kids need it. Yeah.
They need it so bad. I mean, my daughters, you know, both of them play volleyball. My youngest is still a diver, swimmer, and all of that got wiped out in the summer. And so they're trying to salvage it, and they're just having like dive practices and swim practices with no competition anywhere in sight. There's not going to be any meets, but just having the kids practice now 3 times a week, it's been huge for them. It's a huge uplift. Just bring some normalcy back.
Right. And even us, like, you know, the other day, my local club team scrimmaged another local club team. I mean, I thought
how huge was that?
It was great. It was, I mean, the kids were dying. Honestly, like the quality of play, you're not playing for 4.5 months.
It doesn't matter though at this point.
It doesn't, you know, at this point. I mean, that's the other thing. I think it's a blessing that college coaches aren't on sidelines, because it's like these kids haven't played for,
they look
for
terrible.
5 months. No, it wasn't terrible. It was, we played a really good team and you know, both teams have really good players. So no, it wasn't terrible, but it's just, I think, you know, it's been a long time since the kids have been running up and down the field and really competing at that level. It's hard to just turn it on after 4 or 5 months. So, but I thought early on, like the way to get back was just to compete locally. But, you know, I'm talking to one of my 21s, my seniors, he's going to Delaware tomorrow to play in a big event and play teams for New York and Connecticut. And our high school team is still scheduled to play at the end of the month, and got an email, and really it looks like it's on track. So, you know, that's why I said it's really interesting when an Ivy school like the Ivy League says we're canceling fall sports, but you drive by a youth football field and they're having peewee practice, right? Because that rec league decided they're going to practice. I just don't know how you decipher those. I don't know how.
Well, I think one thing, honestly, because I'm the Corona King. One thing that, Dane, that I think that they're doing is because, of, you know, kids under 17 are at such a low risk of this. I think the number is, because I was explaining this to my brother, who, and you know, one of my nephews has got a real serious compromising sort of condition, and we don't even know if he should come to the beach with us. But I think in terms of kids under 17, I think like 20 have died out of like 43 million or something. Like, don't quote me exactly on the numbers, right? But for super, super young kids, this is not a big deal. But now once you start to get into college, we all know that when my son goes back to school, every kid in his dorm is going to have it, like the first weekend, right? They're all going to get it, and they're all going to spread it to each other. And I think that they'll all be fine. But it's just a little bit different as we get older, as we get into college.
Yeah. And know everyone, and you just don't know where those kids will bring it once they get it. And that's, you
right.
know, that's,
so we got to be careful.
That's the piece. Yeah, exactly.
There's
so I don't have all the answers. I am not the Corona King or Queen or anything in between, but
might be a queen, but a different kind.
No, I just, I really just think that, you know, time will tell. We'll figure it out. But I don't know. I don't know. Pro leagues are starting up. You know what I mean? It's tough. It's like you get excited about one thing, or you maybe get down about one thing, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, the MLL is coming back, which, you know, it's great to see. Or the PLL is coming back, but then you're also like, wait a second, now the Ivy League is not having sports. So we'll see. We'll see, man.
Well, the other shoe that dropped today, which was kind of depressing, and it's something that we've talked about for months, and you could see this coming. I didn't necessarily see it happening at Stanford, though. Stanford announced today that they're cutting 11 of their sports.
Yeah.
So 11 of their varsity programs, which are men's and women's fencing. Now, listen, these aren't the money makers by any stretch, but still, I mean, these are athletes. These are kids that work their asses off to get that opportunity, to get that Stanford education, to compete at the college level. You feel for them. You feel for the coaches. But they are discontinuing at Stanford University. They're discontinuing men's and women's fencing, field hockey, lightweight rowing, men's rowing, co-ed and women's sailing, squash, synchronized swimming, men's volleyball, and wrestling. Again, those aren't massive sports. I mean, wrestling's pretty big. Men's volleyball, I'm a fan of that. All, you know, and I root for all these kids that work so hard for this. And they flat out say this is part of the financial ramifications from the coronavirus pandemic. And, yeah, you know, if it can happen to a school like Stanford, who's probably got, I mean, can you imagine the endowment that Stanford has?
Right.
And they can't find a way to make those sports work?
Whew. Yeah.
Scary.
No, I know.
It's scary.
It is. And that's probably the biggest. I mean, there's been other big names, right? Cincinnati and some other big schools, but
that's a big
11
one.
Sports. That's a lot. That's a lot of sports. You know what I mean? Like, it was when we had Andrew Athens on here, Furman cut what, lacrosse and baseball?
Yeah.
Two?
Yeah, two of them.
And it was all male sports, right? Because obviously, good Title IX, I'm sure, to balance it
out.
Yeah,
this is 240 student athletes, 22 coaches.
I mean, that's a ton.
Yeah. Now, the good news is they're going to be supported, and whatever scholarships they have, they'll be able to ride it out, and they'll get that Stanford education.
But those kids love I'm sure they love the education, and they love the scholarship.
They want to compete.
They want to play. They want to play.
Yeah, they want to compete.
They'll go down the road to UCLA or USC and get a great education and play there. But it's more like men's volleyball. I mean, that's not even offered at that many schools.
Yeah.
So
it's a scary time, man.
It is a scary time, but the best is yet to come.
You keep saying that.
I keep saying that. I don't, and I'm going to say it until I believe it. I do believe that. I mean, the best is yet to come. We'll see.
Yeah. And don't worry. I know everyone's freaking out because we have some hot spots around the country where the cases are going through the roof and the media is going crazy. Don't worry. I'm the Corona King. I'm telling you, deaths are.
I get so much flack for you being the Corona
Listen,
King.
Listen, I'm the Corona King. Deaths are plunging. Okay, there are going to be a couple areas where they pop up and they spike, but for the most part, this thing's going out, all right? And then fall, we're going to be okay. By January, for sure, we're going to be okay. And then we're going to throw a vaccine on you, probably from my local guys over at Novavax, which has just bought stock in. And the government, Trump just gave them $1.6
billion.
And then we're just going to be good. Don't worry, we're going to be good.
All right.
We're going to be good.
Let's speak it into truth. We'll see.
We're going to make it happen.
But
all right.
Until then, we want everyone to be safe, and we'll go from there.
Always be safe. Never suggest. Yeah. And listen, I wear a mask everywhere I go.
Now, I'm not
going to wear one when I go walk outside, but if I'm going to get food, or if I'm going in the mall, or if I'm going into a store, I'm wearing a mask for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if it does anything, but I'm wearing it.
Well, that's my whole thing. I don't know if it does anything, but it doesn't really. I mean,
it doesn't hurt me.
It doesn't hurt me, so I'm just going to do it, and that's what I'm telling. I've been telling the kids. It's like it doesn't hurt you to wear it, and so wear it, and hopefully we can keep doing what we're doing, whether that's practice or whatever it may be.
Do your part.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whatever you can. All right. When we come back, we're super excited to be joined by a super timely guest. The guy coaches in the Ivy League, super respected. He's smack dab in the middle of all this Ivy League drama. He's a Georgetown Prep and Princeton grad, and he's the current D coordinator for Princeton. That's Jeremy Hirsch. Please don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back. Our guest today is a 2010 graduate of Princeton, where he's a four-year defenseman, two-time captain for the Tigers. Missed only one game over 4 years, Dane. He's an Iron Man. As a senior, he was Princeton's first solo captain since 1980. He was awarded the Higginbotham Trophy in 2010, awarded annually to the team's most valuable player. He was a part of two Ivy League titles at Princeton. Before that, he graduated, of course, from Georgetown, where he was a three-year letter winner. Of course, that's Georgetown Prep in both lacrosse and football. He was an All-American his senior year, and Prep finished that year as the number one ranked team in the country, Dane. He started his coaching career at Malvern Prep in 2012. Then he made the jump to the college ranks by becoming a D coordinator and strength and conditioning coach at Hampton Sydney. Then coached 4 years at Hobart before being named a D coordinator at his alma mater, Princeton, in 2017. We are pumped to have another local guy, former captain and current defensive coordinator at Princeton, Coach Jeremy Hirsch. Coach, welcome.
I love it.
How about that?
Great intro. Yeah. Thanks. It's great to be here. Getting the invitation to speak with you and Dane, it means a lot. Been a long time listener. Feel like I'm a P1 going back to my house 15 years ago. You know, listening to you guys from the drives down from Olney down to Georgetown Prep, and here today. So
where would you have gone if you didn't go to Georgetown Prep? I kind of muffled my voice when I said Georgetown Prep, just teasing. But where would you have gone if it wasn't for Prep?
Sherwood High School is parents live down the street. It's actually funny. When Good Counsel moved out from Wheaton,
right,
they moved to, I can see from my parents', backyard, you basically can see the new Good Counsel. So would have gone to Sherwood, and then Good Counsel ended up being right down the street. My sisters all went there, and my cousin played football there, Brian Daly. And then,
right.
But ended up down at Georgetown Prep.
Yeah. And you had a hell of a run. Today we want to just jump on what you're going through right now. Then we'll go backwards. You're currently at Princeton. Ivy League had a massive announcement today. You've been on Zoom calls all day, with your administration, your athletic directors, right? The Ivy League, I guess, has decided, I don't know what the official wording is, but essentially to best case postpone the fall sports, if not cancel, right? They're going to reevaluate in January. Now, fortunately, men's lacrosse is technically a spring sport, but we all know this is year round. This affects fall ball. This affects everything. And of course, we all know that the Ivy Leagues, they were the ones that kind of got this all going basketball wise, right? In March. So coach, what's today been like? Was this news a surprise to you? And how's the day been so far?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. I mean, being pretty much on the phone all day and then, some departmental meetings. I feel like it's round two of this, dating back to the March and the cancellation of our spring season. And then, dealing with, some eligibility and of current players. And then, obviously this news that cancels the fall. So, I mean, just going by what we know and has been distributed amongst the Ivy League is there will be no fall athletics. And then I guess you combine that with the statement from Princeton being that, freshmen and juniors are allowed back on campus in the fall, and then sophomores and seniors in the spring. You're just looking at that and, we all know that athletic teams are comprised of kids from every class. So,
wow. I didn't even know that element. Jeez.
Yeah. So that I've seen that. And Jeremy, you might not know the answer. I've seen that in a lot of, I think Harvard might be doing the same thing where freshmen can come back and seniors can come back in the spring so they can finish their senior year. But have they said any caveat to if you're on an athletic team, everyone can come back? Or they just haven't told you.
Right. So each Ivy League institution, I think Yale's come out with a statement on what they're doing. And then I'm pretty sure Harvard did. And everyone's a little different. I think everyone's plan is to decrease the amount of students on campus. So I think each university's taken that up in different ways. Princeton being there'll only be half of the their student body on campus at any given time. So, obviously, just two classes at a time to just kind of keep down the numbers on campus. So obviously it's hard to,
but they're not going to give you they're not going to give sports a pass and say, hey, you can have everyone.
That has not been communicated.
You're going to lobby for that? I feel like the Ivy League doesn't care. I feel like they don't care. They don't care about sports.
You don't have to answer that, Jeremy, but
right. I think it's just, our guys are treated as students first, and, they're immerse in the student body from all different aspects, and one aspect being athletics. And obviously, you know, as coaches, you know, we're angling for, you know, them, you know, getting eligibility and having a, you know, part of their experience relies on athletics. So yeah, we're trying to, you know, push that agenda as much as possible. We care about, you know, the guys in our locker room, making sure, you know, they have the best experience. So I get the perspective, honestly, and I understand the frustration that a lot of different parties have with this information, for sure.
Are you worried at all? I mean, obviously you can, if you want to touch on the Sauer stuff, obviously you kind of lost a guy to this already with Sauer's leaving Princeton, but are you worried at all that you're going to lose other guys? You know what I mean? Cause I mean, if I'm just putting myself in this situation, if I'm a junior and a senior and it's like, you know, it's probably more unknown in the Ivy Leagues, and then you can compare it to the NESCACs as well, where it's like more academic oriented. So they're less likely to kind of push the envelope when it comes to bringing sports back. I might just be like, you know what? I'm going to go somewhere where I know I can play. Are you worried about that at all? Did you guys talk about that as coaches with the team? Like,
well, from a current roster standpoint, you know, we feel like the relationships we have with the players and, you know, how special the program is, we feel like those guys want to experience that. And, you know, we think we're poised to, you know, do some really good things in these coming years. So I think the current guys, you know, want to maximize that experience. And now on the back end of that, you know, you train these guys, you develop great relationships with them, and, you know, you want to see those guys have great success. So in terms of Mike Sauer and, you know, a couple other guys in that class, you know, we're thrilled for them to continue their, you know, their athletic career at different places. And we know they're going to do great things. And, you know, but, you know, to say that we don't feel a little bit for, you know, having them part of our program and moving forward, you know, it doesn't feel great for sure. Now on the recruiting aspect on the front end, you know, we feel like, you know, the Ivy League in general and our institution specifically has some good things. So we think we can, you know, lean on those aspects of the university and still our athletic department and still get, you know, high caliber recruits. But just, you know, there's obviously some hurdles, but we got to figure out ways to make those opportunities for sure.
Well, let me ask you a question. What are you clicking?
Are you clicking? Sorry.
It's like a nervous habit. Yeah. I do the same thing.
No, it's good. No.
Yeah. All right. So hold on. I want to go back over this thing. So explain what they said. So they're saying that only two classes can be there in the fall, and they're saying only two classes can be there in the spring. Is that what they're saying at this point?
Correct. And
well, that nukes the spring. I mean, let's do the math. You can't have a spring.
Right now, it looks like that would be challenging to compete on a national level.
What's going on? How come people aren't reporting this? Are people not doing the math? Hold on. I don't understand this, Jeremy. I haven't done my homework. Is this simply Princeton, or is this all Ivies?
I know Yale and Harvard. I don't know what the other Ivy League institutions have decided, but I think
they're doing the same thing.
Harvard, right. Harvard is for sure. I read it earlier today. I mean, it's freshmen and juniors, and then I think seniors coming back, and then
seniors and sophomores or whatever in the spring.
Yeah,
You can't. There's no sports. There's no sports. You can't have sports with half a team.
Well, that's why I was asking about like
the
a caveat.
Waiver. Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're just probably. I mean,
they would at Ohio State. I promise you that. Right.
They're probably just keeping you guys in the dark, right? I mean,
it has been communicated that they will reevaluate, let's say, winter sports and then spring, since it's such a fluid situation. But obviously, you know, all things looking at it, you know.
Objectively.
Looking at it like objectively, you got two classes on campus, so I understand the
I'm livid.
Sure.
I'm livid as I'm talking to you about this.
Well, you know, we got 50 guys that, you know, had their last season canceled, and I feel for all the guys, you know, the seniors in high school that, you know, obviously didn't have their spring season,
right?
Don't have a summer, you know, and then, you know, fall ball is really important from a developmental standpoint and a training standpoint, and you know, we have. I mean, the best players play at all programs, and, you know, you're bringing in, you know, some young guys that, you know, want to get after it pretty quickly. And I feel for them. So, you know, we got a lot of work to do, to figure this out. And, you know, just going with the facts that we have now, it doesn't,
I'm pissed.
You know, isn't it maddening though? I mean, like I can, you know, this is a, when we don't, this is not a visual thing. We can't see, we don't do it on video, but like, I can see it on your face. And like, it, I feel the same way even as a high school coach, like you don't, you're like caught in purgatory because you want to plan and prepare for the fall and you want to try to develop your players. But then it's like, wait a second, like, what are we going to have? And you always, as coaches, I'm sure, Jeremy, you guys talk about controlling the things you can control, which is, you know, obviously an important thing to do in this moment. But like, it feels like none of it is in our control as like lacrosse guys. And we, like you said, it's not just the seniors that got affected, juniors, you know, freshmen in college. Stevie, you don't, you, Eric, your son doesn't know what the hell he's going to do, you know, when you're moving on his fifth year. So it's
no, he, I mean, wants to play.
It's a show. It's he a wants, show for sure.
If they take away next year, is he going to get two more years?
Yeah. What would they do? It's a great question.
I mean, because it's already, everybody already kind of, I'm not going to say they regret, but the coaches that we've spoken to are really scratching their heads because they're happy for the kids. But we all know the crunch, right? And then it has, you know, and this is something that is going to affect classes for years to come, just trying to sort all this out. Are they going to do that again? Are they going to compound that again? I mean, is my kid going to be an undergrad for 9 years? I mean, what's going on? This is insane. This is insanity.
And Jeremy, you guys... So, like, just for that rule, like, at Princeton over the next 3 years, like, how will that play out with all your guys? Because can they do a fifth year there, or they're all going to leave and go do graduate programs somewhere else? I don't know how that works.
Yeah, presumably the current guys that went through this in the spring of last year, so not talking about our incoming guys, they have a year of eligibility that the NCAA granted to everybody. You know, there's other institutions where, you know, you can come back as a fifth year or you know, spread out your education. You know, it's our understanding right now that you know, our university is going to, you know, hold true to those standards. So yeah, those are all things that, you know, we got to, you know, we're dealing with. And, you know, you got a lot of, you know, passionate kids, and we got to provide them answers and provide them, you know, the best opportunity to have a great experience. So
I feel for
Princeton. I mean, school like Princeton, coaches are going to be like looking at it as a recruiting school. Like, if they know all those kids over the next 3 years have 1 year left and they can't go back, I mean, that's, you know, from a transfer portal standpoint, right? I mean, that's not that you want to hear that, Jeremy, but Eric, that's what's going to happen.
No, I know. I feel for Jeremy.
That's what happened this year with the players that couldn't come back. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Jeremy knows how good players are when they're seniors. Like, you know,
build them up all those years.
And then you'll see a guy like Sowers probably dominate, you know, at Duke, or if we even have a season. So, I don't know. It's
yeah. You feel like we feel for all our guys, and you know, we want them to, you know, we think we can, you know, do something special with the locker room that we've assembled and put together, and the time and effort you put in with those guys, and you know, the guys that, you know, move on and find other opportunities, you know, we want them to be, you know, we want them to maximize that opportunity as well, but and try to find some positives in this situation for sure. But it's not ideal.
I'm depressed. I'm totally depressed.
It doesn't take much to get you depressed, Eric.
No, but this is awful.
You're always negative.
I was going into this thinking, I was reading all the stories. I was like, okay, they cancel the fall, but you know, they'll reevaluate in the spring and they'll get going. But I mean, if they're only having, I mean, they're currently planning on only having half the class there in the spring. That's what they're currently planning. I guess the optimistic take is, if we get this under control, and maybe, you know, we get some vaccine that make people feel better, then maybe they'll allow, you know, they have to allow all the students on campus, particularly in the Ivy League, or it's not going to happen, right?
Right. There's been communication that if, like you said, if they can get this under control, and I don't know the threshold or the exposure rate that needs to be matched or met, but there is, there's definitely that information that's been out there that if it can get to a certain number, and people can make those decisions, then absolutely. And right. We can have everybody back and we can move forward. Absolutely.
Right. And we hope so. I mean, I can't imagine the college lacrosse landscape without Ivy Leagues. I mean, we've talked about it a couple episodes, right, Eric? Like how good Ivy League lacrosse has been, including Princeton and other schools over the past couple of years. Like,
it's huge.
You know, when in March, when the season ended, you know, and Jeremy, I don't know exactly where you guys, I know you guys were having a good season, you know, a ton of super competitive teams in the Ivy League that were not just competing for championships within their conference, but national championship contenders. And then, you know, again, so let's say the season comes back, but the Ivy League is not there next year. Like, I don't even know how you can crown a national champion if they're not playing. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
Yeah. From a conference standpoint, I mean, the Ivy League obviously, you know, has done well these past couple of years. And we thought we had a really complete team this past spring. And I know a lot of teams felt that. And obviously everyone wants to compete and figure out who's the best. So,
all right, let me ask you this. All right, so what is the plan now? So you're gonna have two classes in there. It's a joke, but are you guys allowed technically to have workouts? Use small group workouts? Is that what they're saying at this point?
Yes, we can work out in the fall. So, you know, whatever the New Jersey state guidelines are at that time, that's what our understanding is what we'll be able to follow. So small group training across all sports at Princeton. Right. We'll be able to operate. So starting with like strength and conditioning, then moving to small group training with your coaches, skill development, and then all the way potentially to, you know, 10, 20 plus kids. That is still on the table. And that is something that they're going to look at. Our administration is going to look at. So yes.
All right. So we could try to work with that a little bit. Can we get, I'm just trying to work around this, Jeremy. Let's talk this through. Can we get can we get some of the upperclassmen or that maybe aren't there in the fall? Can they get, they're all going to be living off campus anyway. Can they work out?
Scenarios have been discussed for sure.
That's a great point.
But I mean, I could see a scenario where that could possibly happen. Right.
Right. Look,
live on campus, but why can't they go and use the facilities?
Right, exactly. I think all
they're probably all paying tuition.
Yeah, if I'm paying $50,000, I should be able to use the field to shoot. Right?
Absolutely. And you know, the campus has some great facilities, so you know,
I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just trying to. We got to make this work. This is insanity.
Maybe we should get Eric. Maybe we should get EB in one of your athletic department meetings.
Yeah, let me talk to the AD. We're not canceling two seasons. We're not doing that. We're just not accepting that. That can't happen. So, you know,
there's
that's all.
Right. No. Our administration. I mean, they're working tirelessly to figure this out because. Like you just said, there's a lot of possibilities.
Right, right. Oh, I feel for you, brother. Oh my God,
It's funny though, Eric, because you mentioned I don't know if you call them loopholes or whatever, but it's going to be the same thing in our local region with like high schools. Like, there's probably a good chance. Well, I would say a good chance. Fall sports are up in the air right now, right? We don't know what's going to happen with high schools and their fall sports and when schools go back in session, but club teams are practicing all around the area, full contact. 25 kids. High school kids have a club tournament tomorrow in Delaware. That's, you know, they're playing teams from out of state, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. And so it's, I guess it's all in the eyes of the beholder in some way, shape, or form. Obviously, everyone is trying to be risk adverse and do what's best for the kids. But it's going to be crazy in the fall when some things are not going to be allowed to go on. But then you know, leave your house and you drive by a park and it's going on right there.
Are you guys going to be recruiting? I mean, there are tournaments going on.
Right. A lot of, you know, watching tape, on the computer. So that's been, that's consumed most of our time right now. And I mean, it's going to be like that through the end of this summer. And then the fall, I'm assuming the NCAA is going to reevaluate and determine what the fall is going to be like. But there's some obstacles there for sure. I think it's a combination of coaches, you know, going out off campus and watching kids play, but it's also the other piece of having kids, high school, you know, PSAs come to your campus, that presents, I imagine, some issues from a travel standpoint, going to different places across the country. Right. So I think that's factoring into some of these decisions that are being made.
Right.
Are you allowed to have visitors right now?
We're not. No. With the dead period, it's a combination of you can't go evaluate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then
okay.
Obviously right. Kids can't come on campus. So until that gets lifted, no. Hmm.
So what's that like watching like recruiting right now on that's something obviously would be foreign to me. Like, just like, are you guys have a schedule? You're like, hey, Jeremy, what event are you watching today? Like, what's that like right now? Has it started or is it really just kind of starting to kick up right now?
I would say this past weekend was the first weekend of you know, some events starting, and then this through this week, you know, we have a calendar we keep as a staff, and spread games out. I think with having film available, we will, amongst our staff, everyone will probably watch all games. I think, you know, some will guys watch different tape, you know, at the start of the week, and then flip flop towards the end of the week. So at a certain point, everything that we need to see, we'll watch. But
so you won't be there, but you'll have all the film.
Yeah, most tournaments have been doing a good job with either uploading to YouTube or different video software. So it's, you know, for the kids, it's different. But you know, all the coaches, I mean, we spend all our time recruiting during the summer, so I imagine coaches are doing the same thing, just from a, you know, a different spot.
Just not as sweaty.
Right.
More comfortable spot. So, but you guys aren't like killing yourself right now to like watch stuff live. You just know it's going to be archived and.
Yeah, there's an interesting NCAA rule. You can't even actually watch live streams of games. So we have to wait for the game to be over, then upload it to whatever software that club tournament's using, and then we watch. So a little bit of it's not too bad, because you can download it and then clip it up, and I can shoot, you know, certain things to my boss that needs to see certain things, and so it's fine. It's what we watch so much tape as it is, so it's fine.
Let's talk about your journey a little bit. How you ended up, you said you were going to go to Sherwood, but you ended up at Georgetown Prep. Is that because you were like already, like, was club lacrosse big at that time? So what years are we talking about there? Are we talking about 2006, 2005, when you were like in eighth grade?
Right. So I started my freshman year of high school, started in 2002. So even before that,
wow,
you know, youth, it was just playing rec. So St. Peter's at the time in Olney had a rec team, and we travel out to, you know, teams in Baltimore, I think Perry Hall and different rec leagues. I had a buddy I grew up with that I went to grade school with. His dad was a football coach at Georgetown Prep, George Cotter, and he had a great experience, you know, having gone to Georgetown Prep and then playing there. And he just, it was just, talked a little bit about Georgetown Prep as a, you know, he had a good experience, but at that time, no. So there was no club. Even when I was in high school, it was so different. You played for your high school. You know, there was a unspoken, I guess, it was just unspoken. If you know, you earned a starting spot, if the team did well, you know, you felt like your coaches would put you in certain summer league tournaments. You know, there used to be SDX Rising Shootout at UMBC that all the high school teams played in. So it was just unspoken that if, you know, you played well, you know, your team was good, you maybe beat Landon once every so often or some of the Baltimore schools, you might get seen by some coaches. So the club scene was not – I didn't play club. I don't remember there being clubs. It was just, you know, you played for your high school team during the summer.
You didn't go to Georgetown Prep to play lacrosse. You went there because, you know, your buddy's dad was a football coach. In fact, you played football there. Did you go there more for football or just the overall experience?
Overall experience. I was new to the game of lacrosse. I was playing baseball, and a couple buddies played lacrosse. So I started playing lacrosse, and then, you know, football was a huge thing, you know, being a Washington Redskins fan. And then at that time, when I was, I think, a freshman at Georgetown Prep, there was a guy named Marcus Mason who ended up playing for the Redskins. So, you know, I watched him as a freshman. I had a, my cousin played football for Good Counsel. So just, you know, football was huge, was a big deal, but no, it wasn't. I didn't go to Georgetown Prep because of sports. I think just the whole experience. And then it just ended up being, you know, Kevin Giblin at Georgetown Prep was a big figure in lacrosse at the time, and I just got lucky. I was there at the right time when Prep was doing pretty well on the lacrosse side of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Talk about that a little bit. Obviously, you know, Coach Giblin's kind of a legend in this area, and I think he's up at Mount St. Mary's now, right? I believe with Coach Gervonti. But just what was that like? Obviously, you know, he's known for being a tough coach.
It's like a larger than life personality, right?
Yeah, but got results, right? You guys won a national title, or, you know, a pseudo national title, if you will, and undefeated, you know, your senior year of high school. So what was that like in your experience lacrosse wise there?
Yeah, I mean, I owe a lot to Kevin Giblin and guys like Mike Kubik and Brendan Dowd and Brendan Kelly. It was just those guys have been doing it for a long time. And Coach Giblin had a lot of strong connections with, you know, as probably, you know, you experience as a high school coach, you develop great relationships with college coaches and they trust you. And, you know, the recommendation means a lot. So, you know, Coach Giblin was a tough coach. But I think what, you know, the college coaches that got his players knew that his players knew how to be coached. They were, you know, they're probably pretty tough. They were pretty fundamentally sound. So, you know, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have had, you know, the opportunities that I had. And then it was a lot because he had great relationships with coaches. So when he said, you know, someone was decent, you know, most, coaches listen. So he was instrumental. He was a great motivator. He coached you hard. I thought, you know, it was funny. He was hard on you, but when you went and played other teams, it was like, it was all of us versus all of them. Like he was so, you know, bought into his guys were, you know, his guys were the best guys. And you felt it was a really unique way. He made you believe that, you know, we could do things. So, he was instrumental. It's probably a lot of the reason why I got into coaching those guys that coached me at Georgetown Prep and the experiences I had, at Princeton with Bill Tierney and Dave Metzbauer. But, it was a great experience and, you know, very, very thankful.
But your personality is so much different. I mean, I only know Giblin from the outside, right? I don't know him personally, but just watching him from afar, right? I mean, he's a larger than life guy, you know, loud. You hear him from the parking lot. You're a more reserved guy. Do you coach the way Giblin coaches? I can't imagine.
Yeah, you know, it's, I think you pull a little bit from all your coaches that you've learned from. There's such a learning curve. You know, last week it was funny. You had Casserly on who was talking about Joe Bugle who passed away.
Yeah.
And you asked him why Bugle was so beloved as like this great position coach. And you talked about, he said he was a patient coach. He was firm, but he was patient, you know, and that, you know, I don't know how many coaches are described as patient. That just stuck with me, you know, Coach Giblin, He has a great presence about him, and a great motivator. And I think you can motivate and you can teach in a lot of different ways. So I think, you know, from what I've learned from listening to other coaches, you got to be who you are. And you can't, you know, try to be someone else. So, and that's been a learning curve for me as well. But I would say the fundamentals of the game, you know, ring true from Kevin Giblin. Some things that I still believe in the motivation standpoint.
Is he a great X's and O's guy, or is he more a motivator than he is X's and O's and that sort of thing?
Both. I would say Bill Tierney at Princeton was, I mean, from an adjustment standpoint, it was unbelievable. He always felt like we could always, you know, make an adjustment or change things up and adapt. Coach Giblin was a little bit of both. You know, developing that, you know, at the high school level, the killer instincts, the compete level, you're learning those things.
Right.
I'd say there's probably only so many, you know, great adjustments you can make at that level because we're still trying to, you know, figure out our own athletic and lacrosse ability. I would say the combination of Kevin Giblin and a guy named Mike Kubik, who was his right-hand man, those guys, you definitely felt like you were very prepared. But it was probably a combination of everything. I mean, he was, you know, exceptional in a lot of areas. I would say the motivation piece was huge.
And so how'd you end up at Princeton then? So is it simply he just said, hey, he's your guy? Or, I mean, what were the choices? What were you looking at?
I got lucky because I got to play in a specific system at Princeton from a defensive standpoint. You know, my recruiting process, being 5'9", My dream was to go to Maryland, you know, being an in-state kid, you know, growing up, just being a huge Terps fan, basketball, football. I remember going on a recruiting visit and, you know, wearing like three pairs of socks so I could, you know, look a little taller in my shoes. And, you know, and at the time they just weren't recruiting, you know, 5'9" defensemen.
Right.
But again, it was playing for Georgetown Prep. I was just worried about earning a starting spot at Georgetown Prep. And, you know, at that time, you know, Blue Chip was just starting. Maybe you got a call up to go to Blue Chip and someone saw you there. But it came down to, you know, Maryland, not really Princeton, a little bit of Duke and a couple of Ivy Leagues. But, you know, when Bill Tierney says, you know, ask you to come play part of his defense, it was an opportunity I couldn't pass up. And, didn't overthink the whole process. It was when I heard from him, it was great.
I can't imagine. So,
and now you've, you know, obviously, what's it like coaching back at the place that you played at? Obviously, I did that a little bit, you know, obviously coached at Robert Morris and came back. And actually, I was not far enough removed that I actually coached players that I played with, but it's a totally different experience. But what was it like when you kind of got the call or got the opportunity to go back? Because I know you're at Hobart before. You know, I remember sitting down with you. I don't know, was that some recruiting event when you were the coach at Hobart? So what was that like when you got that call to go back to Princeton?
Yeah, it was pretty special. I mean, Princeton means a great deal and Princeton lacrosse means a great deal. So, you know, to coach at your alma mater, it means a lot. You know, very grateful that Matt Madelon gave me an opportunity. You know, there's a lot of history that, you know, with the program from what, you know, Bill Tierney and Dave Metzbauer did. So to come back as a coach where, you know, they were one sitting it was emotional, you know, coming back to the office and, you know, potentially sitting in maybe the same seat as some assistants that have come through the program. So, you know, that was, it meant a lot. And then, you know, working with the guys, I mean, I had great players up at Hobart and, you know, that's a special place. And in the locker room that we have now, I mean, just really impressed with the guys that we have. So, part of just being part of the locker room, being around those guys is why you coach and why you do it. So, the guys that we have and the coaching staff that I work with it's a special place for sure.
Did you ever harbor any ambition to play afterwards? Did you want to play like a little indoor? Did you want to play, you know, in the MLL? Did you ever have those dreams?
Yeah, absolutely. When kind of my career ended at Princeton, you know, having those aspirations to play in the MLL or indoor were definitely something that, you know, I wanted to explore. You know, it's interesting that the professional game is very much, you know, it's the elite of the elite from an athletic standpoint. And, you know, you got to be a pretty special cover defenseman, I think, to play in that league. And obviously there's some IQ guys. You know, I didn't have many opportunities to play at the next level from being 5'9" and I was very, very fortunate to play in a system under Bill Tierney from a defensive standpoint, where I was more of a third guy, an IQ guy. I didn't cover the ball a ton. I didn't cover those elite, you know, one matchups. So playing at the next level, I think you got to have part of that of your game. And it's not something that, you know, it's not something that was within my skill set. So went more the coaching route for sure. But,
What do you make of the current sort of professional landscape right now with what Paul's doing with the PLL? And, you know, the MLL seems to be hanging in there. They just announced they're going to do their little tournament. They're going to try to one-up the PLL, right? Get it in there maybe a little before. But both seem to be thriving. I think the MLL, they're going to have their games maybe on ESPN or some sort of version of that. What do you think of the professional landscape right now?
It's phenomenal. And I hope everything goes off, you know, in July with the MLM and PLL. I mean, we're huge supporters from, you know, watching the league last summer and the quality of the production was off the charts. So, you know, huge fans. And it's something that, you know, these guys that work so hard through 4 years and then to have that opportunity to continue to play the game, and get the national exposure that the PLL is doing is phenomenal. So, you know, we're super excited. I mean, we watch tons of college lacrosse, obviously, but watch tons of professional as well. And, you know, Paul Rabel and the PLL, what they've done is phenomenal. So we're super excited. I hope it happens because we obviously all, I think everyone wants to watch such high end lacrosse for sure.
Oh, we need to watch something, right? We gotta watch something.
Hey, golf's there. Yeah. Golf's been great. Golf's been a great saving grace. And they've set the tone. Why are you not excited? You're not excited about the golf?
It's fine. It's not the same. This is a lacrosse podcast.
Yeah,
you
I
keep
know.
Keep trying to angle for your golf podcast and you want me fired. That's why.
That's not I'm true. Not, I can I'm do not both.
I'm not buying that. No, so.
You can guest on my golf podcast, Dane. Don't worry.
Yeah, I'll teach everyone how to break 100. It'll be great.
Well, listen, Jeremy, it's a pleasure having you on. You started out disappointed and just depressed. But you know you're such a positive guy that you're pulling me out of it. Let us know if we need to talk to the AD or anybody or if there's anybody with the Ivies that we can talk to, because we are not. I promise you, we are not canceling two seasons in a row. That's not happening. As a country, we're not going to allow that to happen. I know for a fact Ohio State's not canceling football, right? Dane grew up in Ohio. Not. That is not happening. Michigan is not canceling football.
They did. Ohio State did cancel workouts today, but no, you're probably right.
Yeah. No.
No, I mean they plan. I think the Ohio State said 40,000 to 60,000 people is what they expect to be able to seat in their stands. So we'll see.
What is that, half? So they want to do half.
It's half. It's half. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it can change tomorrow. So, Jeremy, you're the man for coming on. I really appreciate it. And best is yet to come. That's been my saying this whole quarantine. I read a book. Won't get religious on you guys, but that was the big theme. The best is yet to come.
I don't know what
that
means. I want you to promote the book, Dane. What's the book?
It's called Chase the Lion by Mark Batterson, who's a preacher in National Cathedral, or excuse me, Theater Church down in D.C. So, but yes, Chase the Lion. The best is yet to come. That's the theme.
Do you have any
books? I don't know what that means. We'll figure it out.
You got an Ivy League education. You got any books you want to recommend, Jeremy?
Well, I just finished Mike Leach's Swing Your Sword, so I'm a big Mike Leach fan right now, and Swing Your Sword.
Nice.
If I could go down to Key West and, you know, eat some seafood with him, I'd be pretty happy right now. So
What is that book like?
He's out of the box thinker. His best thing is, you know, he didn't play high end college football, so he's like, I get the, you know, college football as a coach, and I didn't know the blueprint because I never was taught it. So I made my own. So he's revolutionized, obviously, the offensive game in football. So he's a interesting figure.
Jeremy,
that's a great coach.
If people want to follow you on social, we always want to promote everybody. How do we follow Jeremy Hirsch, Coach Hirsch, on Twitter, Instagram? Come on, give it to us.
Yeah, I need to get my Twitter game up, but it's Hirsch_Tigers, and then Instagram is just my name, Jeremy Hirsch, 37.
All right, hold on. Do I follow you, Jeremy? I follow you. Oh yeah, we're good. I follow you. You haven't tweeted in a while, though. Come on.
Yeah, the original content. I gotta do a better job with that. Big retweeter, liker. I know that doesn't get you followers, so I gotta figure that piece out. But
Jeremy's a grinder, man. He's just a grinder. He's not on social media like you, Eric. Not everyone can be a social media diva like you.
Hey, somebody's got to be a rock star around here. Come on.
I know, exactly. Yeah.
Well, keep the updates coming. I mean, the interviews you've had from, you know, the guys from the NFL, doctors, and I mean, it's where I get my news. I tune in every morning. So
I'm kind of known as the Corona King. So if you have any Corona questions, I got all the answers.
I've heard.
Yeah, I'm kind of like the doctor.
We need a libel like a statement at the end of this podcast.
No, no, no.
Please do not go to Eric for you.
No, I'm just giving the truth. That's all I do is give the truth.
As long as you're not administrating like COVID tests, Eric, I think that's where we're.
Hey, we had COVID tests. Did you know that? We took COVID tests the other day, Coach. We did that. Dane had one. And then I went there. My daughter had one. Yeah, it's easy. Yeah.
I did so one. I was negative. It was
negative. There's no negative, corona negative, in the Bickle negative, household.
Yeah. So you went down to Annandale?
Annandale.
Annandale at a clinic down there?
No, it's a clinic. You gotta get the rapid test, because who wants to take a test and sit there and be nervous about it for 3 days? Nobody.
I mean, Eric, was that place not a little shady?
I mean,
like going around the building.
Definitely a guy that ran across the parking lot, and I thought he had just robbed a bank, but it was fine. I mean, we pulled up, we called them, we told them that we were there. They came out. The guy looked like he just landed on Mars, and he stuck the thing up our noses. And 20 minutes later, we found out we were good. It's amazing. If your family is around and they want to get tested, yeah, dude. I wanted to go drive to my mom and hug her. I mean, I feel like I could get a free hug in. You know what I mean?
Did you?
Nah, she probably still wouldn't hug me. She's a little paranoid right now. Jeremy, thank you so much, man. You are the man. We love you, man. Best of luck to obviously everything that's going on over there at Princeton and the Ivy League. I'm going to talk to the AD. Don't worry. I'm going to get that straight. Thank you so much, Dane. That's Coach Dane Smith on Twitter. I'm EB Junkies. That's Coach Jeremy Hirsch. It's Hirsch_Tigers. On Twitter. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. His Twitter following is pathetic. We got to get that up. Coach is not going to be happy about that. For Dane Smith, I'm Eric Bickle. That's Jeremy Hirsch. We will see you next time. Be safe out there, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.